Hello, good evening, good afternoon, good morning. I did those like in reverse. I don't know if purposefully, but there it went. But hopefully that covers at whatever time you are listening to this episode of The Circuit. I am Ben Barron.
Hello, world. I am Jay Goldberg.
I'm dealing with a little bit of a cold from my plane travels of the last 3 weeks. I don't know where I got it from, but thus is the nature of being on airplanes and hotels every week, so apologies for that. But a lot's happened around earnings, so we thought we would frame this conversation within a couple of names within categories, but use it more to kind of talk about the sector of semiconductors, if that makes sense. So, which do you want to jump off with, Jay Goldberg?
Let's get data center out of the way, because we've been talking a lot about that, and data center is sector is doing really, really well, but not as good as many people on the street had hoped, which is why AMD stock got beat up after its earnings. We talked about this last week. Intel's results didn't really excite either.
Yeah.
And really the big question now is NVIDIA stock, which is, they're reporting in 2 weeks, I think. And I mean, that's the one that really matters here. I think expectations have been lowered considerably for the sector. And that might be in their favor. I think if they had reported first, they might have borne the ire of everyone's disappointed expectations. But I think their numbers, I mean, I'm sure their numbers are really good by any objective standard, but by the subjective standard of expectations versus the street, who knows? But the sector as a whole
right.
is doing well.
I think correct me if I'm wrong, but I guess my interpretation of this would be, unpacking your AMD point and your Intel point, I guess the question is, does anybody other than NVIDIA benefit from the CapEx to the moon that we talked about last week? And I think that's really the question. Despite what sounds like a solid pipeline, also, again, an expensive chip endeavor by AMD for the MI300X, same with Intel with Gaudi 3 now, yes, they both talk about progress that they're being made, that people are deploying these in certain areas. But I think that's the big question, is that if everybody keeps increasing, what's the opportunity for anyone other than NVIDIA? With again, the added layer of this dynamic that, as we've talked about many times, the hyperscalers are continuing to double down on custom silicon, which again kind of makes who benefits? Their custom silicon and NVIDIA. Seems to be the view, and the question is, who else, if any, really, really benefit from this increased TAM? I think that's the looming question.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the question that's looming over the industry fundamentals strategically. I think that's like a whole other episode, like where all of this is going, and we've talked about it a lot, right? And I think the part of the problem is, there's this big AI story, and it's taking time to develop, and investors by nature aren't great at long-term thinking. And so when we look at the near-term stuff, we get very lost in quarter by quarter, how much is your estimate of the TAM shifted
right.
one way or the other. But the big story is good. The actual pacing of it is still very complicated. And I think to the extent that, I mean, we've been on this chase now for a year and a half, which is companies that benefit from AI, and it's not a big list. It's fairly concentrated, right? NVIDIA, memory, Supermicro, God help us, some of the testing companies, the memory companies, that space, Astera Labs, like there's relatively finite. And what we see is Intel and AMD trying to wrestle their way into that, and it's not going to be easy, but they're making some progress. And then longer term, there's this story around the edge and whatever that holds, and inference. And, that one, I have no answer to that. I'm sure we're going to be talking about it a lot in the future, over and over.
Yeah,
so,
yes.
Stay tuned.
Yes. Okay, so, yes, that's Agreed. So I think, again, that's the looming question with everybody's models, which we don't know. And man, the NVIDIA one's going to be super interesting. Their stock was up quite a bit today, had a little bit of a surge end of last week. But I certainly think people have high expectations. Let's hope it meets it. I think they just want to know that this cycle is continuing, right, as the infrastructure build out picks and shovels, and perhaps them being the biggest beneficiary of that. So we'll see. But yeah, very brief on data center, just to catch up with that. Let's talk about PCs. I guess let's frame this too, that there's the first half of the year generally is not amazing when it comes to consumer categories. I think everyone's got to remember the context that the strongest quarters worldwide are your holiday quarter, and then to some degree into January in China, which for anybody who has a huge exposure to China in terms of product revenue and shipments, Chinese New Year. After that, it kind of goes out this lull, right? You look at everybody's consumer revenue beefs, and you always see it strongest in the fourth quarter. So call it January, December. After that, it kind of cools down, and then the conversation continues to be what happens in the second half of the year. That's sort of where you shift your focus to. So I would say things were less bad than expected in consumer PCs. There was a bit of a concern that enterprises would hold off because of the whole AI PC idea, meaning like, we need to buy PCs, but we want to know what's coming before we decide to buy said AI PCs or whatever. They don't seem to be waiting. They needed to refresh devices. That happened again, not at a massive level, but everybody talking about client Intel, AMD, even Microsoft, in terms of Windows, sounds like it's good, and PCs were okay. Again, not their best quarter ever, but not bad. And again, now the conversation comes into what's the second half look like, really?
Yeah, I think I actually don't like, I don't love this setup. It makes me a little nervous because on the one hand, you have companies, you have a lot of the vendors in the space, Microsoft, Intel, Qualcomm, very much pinning their hopes for the category on whatever Microsoft launches later this year. But then you have enterprises who, I think there's a story coming out of Intel, like, oh, there's a big refresh cycle coming because of AI PCs.
Right.
And the problem is enterprises are buying PCs right now,
right,
which means they're not looking at that upgrade cycle. Otherwise, they would hold off. And so perversely, the fact that results right now are doing okay for PCs makes me think that results later in this year aren't going to quite play out the way some of these companies would like them to.
I tend to agree.
Barring an AI miracle from...
Ooh, an AI miracle.
From, whenever they get around to it. So, I don't know.
Yeah. I think this is the rub, and I do think everybody that thinks about this category, whether you're making chips for this sector, building products for this sector, and or just tertiarily interested, the theory is that AI PCs drive a super cycle, and I hate this term because I really only believe there was one of these in history, and that was with the iPhone 6 when they changed to a larger form factor. And other than that, there has not been. So I think it's very, very difficult for us to say, yes, a super cycle is coming. What I will say, though, is I do think there will be a lift to the category. Projecting that is a fool's errand. Now, what might be a benefit, and if we're just going to try to have any potential hope that the cycle could be better than normal, which is the way that I would look at it, right? If your average year is, let's just say, 240, to 50 million PCs, including Mac, not excluding Mac, including Mac, would we see a better year or a better quarter by couple million, you know, 5-10 million PCs than normal. That's the way I'd look at it. Not that we're going to drastically ship more PCs year over year. Now, the benefit is I do think that Apple's efforts in AI is going to lift all boats. So how much they help lift all boats, and then your timing is, you know, Microsoft's got stuff down the pipe. We've got more momentum for AI PCs. I could see it being a positive, but I'm not in the camp of, like, it just drastically changes the shape of the category. I don't see anything that moves us to even record PC sales numbers, but it will add some lift. I don't know how much. That's the point I'll end it on.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Barring an AI miracle, we're quibbling over a few points in growth.
Yep.
Okay.
But what'll be nice is that there will be some details that come out, and we can very specifically talk about some specific features and then say, does that change our thesis or not change our thesis? So wait until June, post Computex. All right, mobility.
Okay.
So I'm curious about this one to you because I don't know how you read this or if you followed it closely, but let's start with the category. The category happens to include Apple as a bellwether, which then obviously informs some of Qualcomm's numbers from modems, as well as Qorvo and or Skyworks and a host of other people. So first of all, I made this point the other day because you and I talk a lot about investor relations, and we talk to a lot of investor relations people, and we see it done really well. We see it done poorly. I'll have to say, you gotta give, and this is not just a quarter point. This is the over the arc of time. Apple's investor relations has to be some of the best people out there because Apple was negative, and their stock was up. Like almost every other name we talked to, had they done that, their stock's down. Like, bar none, I don't care who you are. However, Apple was not as bad. It was bad, but it wasn't as bad as expected, and the stock rallies.
So, not to besmirch the name of the Apple IR team, I will say that a $100 billion share buyback didn't hurt.
True.
The stock. That was the thing I heard most from investors.
True.
And from the sell side. Because $100 billion is a lot of money. That's a big buyback. And just mechanically, the stock is going to go up, right, based on those kinds of numbers. I think once we get past those mechanics, though, they don't have anything else to invest their money in. Like
GPUs?
I mean, right? I mean...
Agreed.
It is. I mean, anytime any tech company does a big buyback like that, you have to wonder, like,
for sure.
And I, you know, fine, it's the right move, but it does sort of recast Apple in a new light. I mean, it's been moving there for a while. It's a services, yes,
right,
incremental growth story. It's not the exciting grower it, right, was for a decade.
Absolutely.
So all right, more. You know, they're doing fine. But yeah, I think there's more interesting stuff. Sorry, go ahead, because I have non-Apple stuff here.
Yeah, yeah. No, no, that's what I was going to transition into, though. But on that point, I'm just curious if you saw any of the... Because I do think China needs to come into this, so I want to have this Apple-China and the non-Apple-China conversation. So it came out, like, IDC and others were like, oh, it's going to be, like, 15-20% negative. And it turned out not even being that bad. Now, we don't know iPhone number shipments, but Tim Cook seemed to indicate that they didn't actually decline in China in terms of units share. Yes, the revenue was down 8 or 9%. I can't remember, something like that. But it was a whole, like, controversial point because it sounded like they were making the point, no, unit share actually wasn't the issue for that decline. I'm still not sure how to interpret any of that. But there is changing dynamics in China, which I think we should talk about on the back of what we learned from Qualcomm. But anyway, point being, I didn't quite catch the nitty-gritty of what they were saying about whether they were actually down units year over year in China or not, because like I said, Tim Cook seemed to indicate they were not.
Yeah, it's interesting. he said that China remains our most competitive market. And you're like, that's a wonderful phrase, because it sort of is very open to interpretation. Does that mean that's the place where you see the most competition, right, which is true?
Yeah, true.
Yes. Or is also the place where you're, you know, at your best, you're super competitive there, which is also somewhat true.
Yeah.
I think the China market has been whipsawed a little bit because we had Huawei go away. Apple picked up most of that share. Then Huawei came back.
Coming back, and, yes.
And took a lot of that share back, but it also took it from other Chinese handset vendors.
Yeah.
Which then leads us to what Qualcomm is saying, which is that they're seeing a turnaround in China Android sales.
Premium.
Yep. So, which is complicated because they're not an Apple and they're not in... Oh, sorry, they are an Apple, but that's not Android, so it doesn't include Apple.
And they're not in Huawei. Yeah.
So, okay. I mean, China's been in a bad place for economically, still is, but there's some signs of consumer something, signs of life from the consumer in China. It's... I mean, personally, I don't want to get too excited about a return to growth in China, because I think the Chinese economy is still in really, really shaky conditions.
It is. So, I think that, so if I'm reading into this correctly, and I want to make this specific caveat, because what unfortunately, when analysts come out and give their, you know, unit share numbers for brands, what they don't tell you, which is the most critical part of this analysis, is how good did the price bands do? So, like, did 600 to 800 do well? Did 900 and above do well? Or was it off? Like, that to me is the most important stat, because premium in China is a little bit different dollar-wise than premium here. However, what I think the consistent narrative of the past 6 to 8 months has been is not necessarily that China is returning to the same unit volume that they were, a.k.a. what you were describing of a full turnaround. It sounds like ASPs have been rising. I mean, meaning that those who are buying phones are buying more of expensive phones as a aggregate than they were 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And that's the framework where I think, okay, yes, that's going to benefit Huawei, because as Huawei comes back as their national champion, starts to compete again in premium, that should benefit Apple as well, but also could hurt given the competition. And that, I think, was kind of what Qualcomm was insinuating at, that all their smartphone OEMs were seeing an increase in ASP, which shows the market slightly moving premium, so that even if you sell less, the dollar number is still relatively there, healthy to stable. Again, not necessarily going into absurd numbers, but relative. So that's my take, is that that market is seeing, as an aggregate of its volume, a slight ASP shift toward ish, premium ish, which I'll just say is $600 and above.
And my response to that would be, I agree, that's what the data seems to be indicating. I'm just cautioning everyone not to put too much stock in that, because it doesn't what this one quarter's results, and it doesn't quite jibe with what we're seeing from other parts of the Chinese economy.
Yeah, agreed. So I think again, right, these few consumer categories we've talked to, we're going to need to see what the second half looks like, because pretty much all notes I saw were like positive signs, but at the same time, you know, we're hoping, let's see what the story is for the second half of the year.
Okay.
So, all right. Next category. Mobile. What you want to hit now?
Other consumer, right? We've done PCs, we've done mobile. Whole bunch of other consumer names out there, home networking, IoT, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I think that sector has been bombed out for a long time. It is struggled even longer than mobile has. It fell before mobile. It seems to be recovering after mobile. But there are some signs that it's turning around, right? We have Silicon Labs and Nordic both making positive comments about what they're seeing on the consumer side in their earnings. those companies have more than just the consumer side to talk to. And so they're both stocks, I think, are up after earnings. They put in some good numbers. But I think I really zeroed in on those their consumer commentary because that was interesting. Like, people are starting to buy gadgets again. Everyone bought all the gadgets they needed in 2022 and then stopped last year and now putting their toe back in the market. And I think it's interesting because that's a story that's not dependent on AI.
Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah.
I know there's some people who sort of point to Wi-Fi 6. Wait, which Wi-Fi are we on now? I've forgotten. Whatever the latest Wi-Fi is. We're on a new Wi-Fi.
7.
And 7, yeah. And, like, the fact that I can't keep that straight tells you everything you really need to know about
Wi-Fi 7. Wait, hear me out. Hear me out, Jay. Wi-Fi 7, a Wi-Fi supercycle. It's coming. No. Hard no. Hard no.
Hard knowing that. Well, yeah. It's there are definitely people, I've definitely heard companies present that as, oh, Wi-Fi 7, you got to go out and get a new router. No, you don't.
You don't.
You don't need a new router. But other things are moving. Like, I think that just sort of speaks to general consumer sentiment is improving around electronics. Or not improving, normalizing. And so I think that's, you know, it's been a rough 18 months. Let's take what victories we can. That is,
yeah,
seems to be moving in the right direction.
Yeah, agree. I have nothing to add to that section. So good comments. Automotive. I'm intrigued by this one. So
automotive. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so we have talked about this and the perspective I'm actually interested in is, why is Qualcomm doing so well and others aren't? Because I think you can look at this a couple different ways. Either A, and I'll be honest with you, I do not know much about the timeline of manufacturing for automotive. I don't think it shrunk from its 4 to 5 year timeline. Maybe it has, or it's a little bit, but maybe they just got a bunch of designs that are now being built versus are they taking share? Cristiano seemed to indicate they might be taking share from others in ADAS because a big portion of that was ADAS. I'm just curious, like, everybody else was really bad. Mobileye's been doing bad. NXP was off. So what are we interpreting Qualcomm's strength on? And to some degree that they actually upped their automotive run ramp number as well.
So I think the key distinction here is that Qualcomm is starting from a much smaller base. I'm okay. Struggling to be polite with this. Qualcomm's starting from a much smaller base, right? You're right. Everyone seems to think they had a really good quarter in automotive, but just to keep that in perspective, it's still less than 10% of revenue. $600 million in automotive revenue in the quarter out of, you know, the whole company did $8 billion for the quarter. So less than 10%. And it's exciting. It's up 35% from same quarter last year. That's good. The other thing that they talk a lot about is their backlog, their design pipeline. Yeah,
pipeline. Yeah.
And they raised that. Went up, right? Yeah. And when you're talking about share gains versus Mobileye, that means they're getting design wins from Mobileye, which is good on paper. It's good. It is definitely a sign of progress, but the transition from that into actual earnings is still 18 months away.
Yeah.
A year. Right. And so, a lot can happen then between now and then, right? Because design wins, like, one, there's always risk in design wins. These customers have a history of being very fickle. They can switch back and forth. Not necessarily, not like they're going to switch from Qualcomm to Mobileye in the middle of a product run, but they may choose to favor one product over another, one of their own products. And if they just decide, hey, the platform that's, we really want to hype up platform B, that's where we're going to spend our marketing money.
Yeah.
And if platform B is a Mobileye platform and platform A is a Qualcomm platform, Mobileye benefits. Like, that, all that can happen. And then on top of that, consumers actually have to want to buy this stuff. And so who knows what consumer spending on auto is going to be like in a year. So there's a lot of unknowns there. So transitioning that into anything meaningful is Qualcomm is at this point not the best bellwether for automotive stocks. It's a very aspirational story.
Yeah.
And I believe what they're saying, but it's like it's not tangible yet, and it won't be for a while.
Yeah, and I do think though in I think the meta point remains, but the contribution of revenue that came from ADAS being so significant, I think is interesting because I do wonder, to your point, like how sticky will a customer be once they depend on you for ADAS? Like if you win ADAS as a share of the market, how easy is it for your next fleet to move away from that? I don't know the answer to this. I'm just saying I feel like they called that number out for a reason. Obviously, ADAS adds a ton of ASP to their content dollar. It's more expensive, so it's going to be important to track that number going forward to the degree that they talk about it. But it was interesting because that I felt like that was obviously an intentional call out to say the percent that came from ADAS. But I'm just interpreting the implications of that. Does that mean it's less sticky? Does that mean, again, the ASPs are there, so that's a big reason why they're increasing this from $30 billion to $45 billion in pipeline. They expect more ADAS. I don't know. That was a non-trivial call out, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of harp on this point a lot, is even to this day, the majority of that $600 million in automotive revenue is not from ADAS. It's from connectivity, from cellular connectivity. Right. We may have tipped over to non-connectivity providing more, but it's still close. It's a lot of connectivity in there, cellular modems.
Yep.
How sticky are these ADAS wins? Nobody really knows yet. It's definitely stickier than... I was going to say it's stickier than a cellular modem win, but
I'd agree.
For a lot of these OEMs, for a lot of these OEMs, there's always only one choice. Right? There's not a lot of MediaTek modems in U.S. automotive.
Right.
Not none, but... Right? European, too. So... Is ADAS stickier? It is more complicated. There's a lot more of a system that has to get engineered. There's platforming, so you see the ADAS systems common across models. But the sort of root instinct of the auto OEMs is to avoid platform dependencies. And so they have some natural purchasing barriers that make it hard to do that. And that's actually probably detrimental to how they need to be approaching all this. But there is that sort of twin tension where they need more from their semiconductor vendors. They need more systems approaches.
Yes.
But they also are afraid of too much systems approaching where they get completely captured by one vendor or another.
Right.
So I don't think we know the answer to that yet. It's definitely... it's good that Qualcomm has this big pipeline. It's not a forever kind of barrier, though.
Yeah. Okay. So... Good points, though. I mean, I think those questions, plus the ones we've made, those set the framework for as we continue to talk about automotive. More clarity is coming from who's winning ADAS. This share shift conversation is going to be a super interesting one. But anyway, good for Qualcomm having a somewhat surprising quarter and narrative around auto. That seemed to be pretty well received with their from the street.
Yeah. So... But that's just one part of automotive, right? And I think we need to talk about the rest of automotive or just industrial semis more broadly. I think that's the last sort of big industrial category. And here the story is moving. The cycle for automotive semis this time was sort of offset from the rest of semis by two or three quarters. So the rest of semis are, you know, now recovering. We saw that. That's what we've been talking about. The auto cycle seems to be... The big question, I think, among investors is, has it finally bottomed? Right? In terms of, or put another way, have inventories now maxed out and we're going to start seeing decreases in inventory? Because that was a big problem all last year, or all this year, was big, big inventory in automotive semis. And the street seems to have reached the consensus that we've bottomed and things will start improving from here. But it's not entirely clear. So we have companies like On and NXP, which reported legitimately good quarters, saw their stocks up as a result. They seem to be saying fairly positive things that conditions are improving. We'll start to see inventory destocking and actual growth later this year. TI sort of said similar things. TI has this giant mountain of inventory that has investors very concerned. There's a lot going on in TI that is confusing in large part because TI doesn't really care what investors think. They have their model in place and they're just going to execute it. I think, but even there, it looks like the worst is over, at least in automotive. I think the broader industrial semi space, though, start talking about, you know, navigation systems, aerospace, machines, manufacturing systems, stuff like that. Here I'm not sure we've reached bottom yet. And the reason I say that is because we saw two of the FPGA vendors' results were not particularly well received, right? We had Lattice this week, and then AMD. Sorry, both last week. AMD owns Xilinx, and nobody really talked about it because Xilinx is, you know, overshadowed by MI300 and GPUs, but Xilinx numbers were pretty bad. And that's, you know, not throwing any shade on AMD. It's just that's where they are in the cycle, right? Everybody, there was a lot of inventory built up. Demand was kind of tepid for industrial. And that's, I don't think that's over yet. I think we still have another quarter or two of pain there with inventory beating up. You know, we have, I think the aerospace side of it, not my great area, but I think there's a lot of moving parts. I don't imagine that Boeing is buying all the semis they thought they were going to need this year. I think there's some big military programs out there that haven't kicked in yet, but probably should, so that that's going in its favor. Telecom is not great. The 5G spend is over. I don't think we're done with the pain there yet. I think that goes on another couple quarters. So, yeah, there's still a lot of trouble out ahead for industrial semis. Just cyclically, right? No problem with the companies themselves.
Yeah.
It is interesting though to think in the context of we have Altera going to get spun out of Intel,
right?
As a stock, I guess maybe next year, I think is what they're thinking. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting. Hopefully, they will come out after the cycle has turned. That's my guess. That's probably a good setup for them. But
yeah. So how much of that, I guess, should we read into is economics, meaning that companies, that's just not where they're spending? Or is there any perhaps reevaluation of their infrastructure spend based on new priorities, maybe some elements of software infrastructure tied to AI? I'm just curious, you know, how much of it's economic versus them perhaps reconsidering some of these infrastructure decisions?
So I think for a lot of these companies, AI is on the roadmap.
Yeah.
But not the priority. The design cycles here are so long that I don't think anyone stopped designing a program
right,
because they want to include AI in it. They're just going to, they're very much going to kick the tires on AI for another year or two before they start throwing it in their systems.
Right.
So I don't think that's slowed things down too much, but I'm sure they're thinking about it. I think it's largely just cyclical factors. And of course, the other big swing factor in all this is China. Because when we talk about industrial parts, this is an area where China has a huge amount of capacity. And I haven't looked in the last 2 weeks, but when I looked 3 weeks ago, those names were all struggling. Hundreds and hundreds of companies with chasing sort of shrinking profit pools. It's not a good look. And there's a lot of excess capacity. To some degree, you know, those companies haven't started really exporting heavily.
Right. So
it's not like some Chinese microcontroller company is going to hurt, you know, NXP's results in Europe, but it's definitely tapping into domestic demand within China.
Yeah.
And especially at the lower end. So there's gonna be a lot of pricing pressure. And like, this is a whole other conversation. I would like to see more people talking about. We should probably talk about it at some point, but like, where is that Chinese wave of capacity going to hit?
Right.
to what degree will it reach into higher and higher level systems? Lots of big questions there. I think it has to be weighing on some portion of the market. It's probably not big enough to really impact anybody yet, but it has to be out there sort of weighing some parts down. And yeah. I think that problem
that's a good point.
Likely to become more pronounced
yeah.
this year and into yeah. next.
Oof. Okay. All right. Good sector rundown. I think that's holistic for where we stand. Obviously, we've got more of these to dive into, but stay tuned for some awesome guests and some great conversations coming up the next couple of weeks. And then Chaos from Computex, which will be awesome to talk about into the summer. So thanks for listening, everybody. Stay tuned, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Tell your friends.